It's a land rich in history that dates back more than 5,000 years. An ancient, sophisticated civilization that thrived in the Somali Peninsula. But war and conflict have played a major part in this region's history. It was occupied by Egypt, France, Britain, and Italy in the 1800s, and had border disputes with Kenya and Ethiopia in the 1900s. Then there was independence, power struggles, and clan wars. The United Nations has played a central role in efforts for peace in Somalia since the downfall of President Siad Barre in January 1991 prompted political chaos and threatened stability across the Horn of Africa region. But almost 30 years on, the Somali people still live in turmoil. Hundreds of thousands have been killed and millions displaced. And as multiple parties continue to fight over control of the country, many consider Somalia to be the UN's greatest diplomatic failure. So, how much longer before we can say peace has finally been achieved in Somalia? A special representative of the UN Secretary General and head of the Assistance Mission in Somalia, James Swan, talks to Al Jazeera. Special representative of the United Nations Secretary General for Somalia, Mr. James Swan, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thanks for inviting me.
Mr. Swan, this is the second time, this is not the first time, it's the second time you are deployed to Somalia as a special representative. The first time was a few years ago for the US government and now for the UN. What made you return to Somalia? And, you know, what can you tell us about, you know, the experience of going to Somalia and trying to resolve that most difficult problem in Africa?
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me as we come to the end of 2020. This is a timely opportunity to talk about Somalia because 2021 will be a critical year for Somalia. We are expecting an electoral process that will lead to a parliamentary election as well as a presidential election. We are also anticipating that 2021 will be the year of security transition, as the Somali government and security authorities take lead responsibility for the security of the country. Also in 2021, it will be important for Somalia to continue with its economic reforms, particularly so that it can realize the full benefits of the debt relief process, which it started on successfully in 2020. And then finally, 2021 is going to be an important year in terms of remaining vigilant about the humanitarian situation. 5.2 million people in Somalia, about a third of the country's population, remain in need of humanitarian support, and we need to keep them in mind as well. But as I returned to Somalia, after really some 25 years of working on Somalia in different capacities, beginning in the 1990s and then through the 2000s and into the 2010s. Somalia remains a compelling assignment for anyone interested in diplomacy, in development, or in the security sector. It is rebuilding from two decades of tragedy, really, as a collapsed state, and all of us want to work for it to achieve further progress in the coming years.
One doesn't know where to start in this respect because, you know, what you said now, you're talking about future prospects for Somalia, next year, what's going to happen next year. But we have been working on Somalia. The UN has been working in Somalia for 30 years. Why the only thing that is bright in Somalia now is something that is going to happen next year and not something that happened during the last 30 years? What milestones has the UN actually achieved during the last 30 years?
I think there has been considerable progress, certainly over the past decade to 12 years. Beginning in the late 2000s, we saw significant progress through the African Union mission in Somalia, which is a UN-financed operation, UN-supported operation, mandated by the Security Council. And certainly between 2009 and 2013, there were very substantial military gains against Al-Shabaab, which created space for the political process also to advance. So the previous transitional federal government of Somalia which controlled only some portions of the capital city, Mogadishu, as late as early 2011. By the end of 2012, with the help of AMISOM, a newly elected federal government of Somalia was able to establish a presence in most of the federal member states and other important population centers. Then, through roughly 2012 through 2016-17, we saw establishment of institutions in the federal member states, with these regional administrations taking shape and beginning to establish a presence and become more functional. We've also seen over the last several years an increased focus on institutional capacity and delivery. So important reforms that led to Somalia achieving a decision point under the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative in March. But we've seen important progress on security sector reforms, such as biometric registration of military and police, such as direct payment of salaries to the security services to reduce risks of corruption. So there are many areas of progress that have been achieved during this time, but much more needs to be done. And again, Somalia is recovering from a very low base that it descended to, very sadly for its population, in the 1990s and early 2000s.
So, in 1993, a prominent UN official described Somalia as the greatest UN failure up to that time. You don't give that description to Somalia now as a UN project.
You have to look at the United Nations in as many facets within Somalia. I mean, we have more than 20 UN agencies, funds, and programs that are providing both humanitarian assistance and development support to the Somalis. So the UN remains very much engaged in responding to the needs of the people. And in fact, UN assistance reached almost 2 million Somalis in need of humanitarian assistance, life-saving assistance during the past year. In addition to those agencies, funds, and programs, there is also a UN mission mandated by the Security Council called the United Nations Support Office for Somalia that provides the logistical support for the African Union mission in Somalia. The African Union mission now has about 20,000 military and police. And it is supported financially both through the UN contribution and from bilateral contributions, notably from the European Union, but also from others. So this is another component of UN support to Somalia. And then finally, we have the United Nations Assistance Mission in Somalia, which is a special political mission focused on coordination among the wide array of international partners in Somalia. It's focused also on institutional support to the government and to the federal member states, and it's focused on so-called good offices, trying to improve relations among Somali political actors and other entities so that the country can continue to stabilize. So I think if we look back to the 1990s as a rather difficult period for Somalia and for international partners trying to help, I think the record is much improved on both accounts since then.
Well, arguably, you know, I mean, some people say yes, the UN, the biggest difference between now and 1993 or 1995 is that the UN is now capable of operating in Somalia. You know, back in the 90s, it was not able because it had to pull out of Somalia totally, and that was considered by the Somalis as the, you know, as like abandonment by the UN. I mean, and that's why many in Somalia look at the UN unfavorably until now. But now, okay, we have this colossal presence of the UN and other organizations, but still we have the same problems. You know, we have is gone, Mahdi Mohamed is gone, but now we have Al-Shabaab. We had refugees then, we have refugees now by the millions. Humanitarian assistance was needed then, it is still needed now by the millions. So even though there is this huge presence and these, you know, scores of organizations you talked about, the problem is still there.
It's a country that indeed does still have many significant problems. Many of them are going to take time to address and to resolve.
Like another 30 years?
I certainly hope it will be sooner than that. And as I noted earlier, I think if we look at the record over the last 10 years, there has been significant progress, frankly, on the institution building side, on the economic development and resource generation side. And certainly, compared to the situation a dozen years ago when the recognized authorities were present only in a few neighborhoods of the capital city, that situation has changed. But there is no doubt there is a long way to go and more progress that's required. I think central to this will be continued stability and increased inclusiveness in the political system. That's why these elections that are scheduled in the coming 4 to 5 months will be particularly important. Ultimately, these will not, regrettably, be full one-person, one-vote elections, but they will be indirect elections in a process that has secured broad consensus among political leaders in Somalia. And that consensus has included the federal president, federal member state leaders, the upper house of parliament, the lower house of parliament, and main political figures, including two former presidents. So there is a strong consensus around the model for the electoral process to be followed. That said, it will be very important that that consensus be nurtured, preserved, and advanced as this electoral model is implemented.
This process that you talked about, many describe it as unrealistic, because when you can't travel between Mogadishu and many other cities, when you can't have this biometric process being completed, when the regions don't trust each other, when the country is in that situation, how can a one person, one vote be achieved? Many people think it will never happen, at least it will not happen anytime soon. So you're talking about it, but at the same time you seem to refer to the possibility that it may not happen.
Well, indeed, the Somali leaders have decided that it will not be a one-person, one-vote election in this cycle. They have agreed on use of an indirect model in which...
Like in the past? Like
similar to in the past, with some refinements and improvements that we hope can be used to make it yet more inclusive and more transparent than has been seen in the past.
How do you describe the relationship between the UN and the Somali government? We remember that last year they sacked a UN special representative, and that's why you replaced him. So, I mean, who has the upper hand in Somalia? I mean, you will talk about national sovereignty, like, you know, the Somali government talks about national sovereignty, but, you know, how do you qualify that relationship? And how can you work in Somalia when the government is not cooperative all the time, and they look at the situation in a different light?
Well, we have a strong relationship with the Somali authorities, and we also try to ensure that we have a strong relationship with other key actors in Somalia, from civil society groups to advocacy organizations to federal member state leaders, even to local authorities in multiple cases. So there is an effort to work with the national authorities, but also we understand that ultimately the beneficiaries of our activities are the Somali people, and so we try to maintain a wide array of relationships and contacts in Somalia.
The African Union mission in Somalia, the military mission, and you have the U.S. also military mission in Somalia, what kind of oversight do you have over these missions? Do they coordinate with you? Remembering that, you know, every time we have news from Somalia talking about airstrikes and civilians being killed. It happened twice this year by AFRICOM, and the UN is standing by. I mean, what is the UN doing to prevent that type of situation? Do you really have some oversight and coordination with these various armies operating in Somalia?
Well, first of all, I think as we look at the al-Shabaab situation, I mean, we need to recognize that al-Shabaab's longer-term vision for Somalia, I'm confident, is not consistent with what Somalis themselves want. We see recurrent terrorist attacks. We see military operations that are harming the population. Al-Shabaab, the youth, but in many ways, al-Shabaab has attacked the youth. Even in 2010, There was a tragic case of young Somalis who had completed their medical training under extraordinarily challenging conditions.
My question is about the U.S. Army and the African Union Army's killings of civilians. Does the U.N. have any oversight on that? Does the U.N. condemn those incidents? Does the U.N. investigate those incidents? Can you give me just a case where the U.N. investigated an incident in which civilians have been killed by U.S. Army or the African Union troops?
Yes, we in fact have a group that convenes. It's co-chaired by myself and by the head of UNICEF in Somalia, looking at the impact of conflict on the civilian population. So indeed, we have a team that records all of these incidents. We seek to investigate them.
We're talking about condemnation. We're talking about trying to prevent it from being repeated. We're talking about the UN imposing order or a modus of understanding between you and the American troops and the African troops so that you prevent further killing of civilians in the country.
Well, first of all, with respect to the African Union mission in Somalia, as it is a UN Security Council mandated mission, the African Union mission is subject to the UN human rights due diligence policy. And in fact, AMISOM has on its staff human rights experts that indeed look into these cases. We also examine them when we receive information indicating that there have been incidents. We advise AMISOM of that and seek their response on it. In the case of the United States and other bilateral partners, they are in Somalia bilaterally. They are not in Somalia under a specific...
Well, that's true, but the UN the UN is in Somalia under Chapter 7, and that means the UN is responsible for the protection of Somali civilians. Even if there is another party that is there on a bilateral level, the UN is responsible for the protection of civilians because it is there under Chapter 7. Of the United Nations Charter.
Yes, so these are also investigated, and when there are cases related to bilateral partners, we also communicate that information to the bilateral partners so that they have an opportunity to look into the case further and to respond on these matters.
Could you tell us of any case where civilians have been compensated, civilians whose relatives have been killed? Has the UN actually gone into the details of trying to redress any situation of collateral damage, as they call it, you know, the killing of civilians? You have notified the parties, but that's not enough in terms of the responsibilities of the UN.
There is, in fact, an existing grid of compensation based on the nature of the of what happened, whether it's a death or a severe injury. And there is a basis on which then those who can establish that they have been victims of these cases are then compensated.
You also support the government in Mogadishu, and we know that the government in Mogadishu has been committing violations against human rights. They arrest arbitrarily. They work against the freedom of expression sometimes, not only sometimes, but frequently, and that happens in Somaliland. It happens also in Mogadishu. Do you try to convince the Somali government or to impose any kind of punishment, you know, if we can say that, when they violate human rights? Do they try to prevent further cases of violations of human rights by the Somali government?
Well, again, we have the human rights due diligence policy involving any of our activities in regard to the Somali authorities or indeed other partner organizations with which we're working. And so that entails validation that there are not human rights violations being committed. If there are cases in which we understand that such violations are occurring, then we have to take measures to ensure that UN support is not benefiting those who are involved in the violation. And we look to find ways to ensure that the people can still benefit from the support that we're seeking to provide, but those in the chain who may have been involved or plausibly believed to have been involved in human rights violations do not participate in those decisions or in those programs.
The case of child soldiers in particular is very problematic, and many people are upset about it outside Somalia, in the the Amnesty International and other organizations. They talk about the dilemma in which child soldiers find themselves. They are forcibly recruited by Al-Shabaab. And when they are captured by the government, they are tried, imprisoned, and sometimes, you know, killed or punished in a severe manner. So on both sides, they are being, you know, hurt. What is the UN doing in this regard to protect those child soldiers?
Yes. Well, first of all, again, we have a team that meets regularly, co-chaired by myself and the head of UNICEF, that looks specifically at issues of children in armed conflict. We've also benefited from higher level attention out of New York with the special representative for children in armed conflict who visited last year, particularly to highlight this as a requirement for further attention by the Somali authorities. Also working through some of the agency's funds and programs, we are supporting rehabilitation programs for child soldiers or children who are able to escape from, defect from armed groups, whether Al-Shabaab or others, who can benefit from some re-entry support, rehabilitation support, both boys and girls. So, there is both an advocacy component to this in terms of engaging the Somali authorities, but also there is a programmatic component in terms of helping those along with other partners who are able to emerge as they re-enter society. I do think this takes us back to our concerns over Al-Shabaab, and of course they do account still for most of the human rights violations that we see there. Most of the civilian deaths continue to be as a consequence of Al-Shabaab.
Another point of contention between the UN and the Somali government, even though you support this government, and it is related to the human rights record of this government, this legislation about sexual violations. I understand that the UN is unhappy with that. What is the criticism that you have against it? And why is the government not cooperative in this respect?
It's important to go back a few years. In 2018, the government's cabinet adopted a draft bill called the Sexual Offenses Bill, which was widely consulted with human rights actors within the UN and among others. And it was widely hailed by Somali human rights activists as well as a progressive bill that would help to ensure maximum protection for women facing risks of sexual violence or other offenses. This was called the Sexual Offenses Bill. Over the summer, a new draft bill called the Law on Sexual Intercourse and Related Crimes was discussed, was mooted, was considered, if not formally introduced in Parliament. And that bill appeared to be a significant step backward, including making it possible in some cases for forced marriage to proceed. And it clearly represented a significant retrogression from the bill that had been introduced previously. We engaged with the Speaker of Parliament and with other parliamentarians. That bill, the new law on sexual intercourse and related crimes, has not been introduced. We continue to believe it is not suitable and would not respond well to the needs of the Somali women and indeed the Somali population in general. But at the moment, it is not under active consideration in Parliament.
So the government has the government has its own red lines, it seems to me. Places where there is no discussion with the UN, there is no compromise. Does that make you think that probably this government is not going to be very helpful in terms of achieving all the goals that the UN is planning in Somalia?
First, in regard to these laws, on the one on sexual offenses bill, that was indeed introduced by the executive. Where it was turned back was in Parliament, by the leadership of Parliament. So it's not an issue specifically related to the executive branch, but rather to the parliamentary leadership. In terms of the collaboration, again, with the Somali authorities, our effort is to be aligned in terms of the institution building with the Somali government. Of course, it will be up to the Somalis to determine how their leaders are selected and what policies they pursue in the future.
Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. James Wan, thank you very much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thanks for having me.